Welcome to the Sharps, Props, and DFS Show. I'm your host, Todd Burrows, and I'm joined by my partner, Ryan McChrystal, and he is going to McChrystalize some props for you to win with this week. And we head into a very interesting holiday week. And while we're doing that, I want to wish each and every one of you a happy holiday season and to thank you all for your support of the show. If you want to get in and get into the comments, go right ahead. But first, it is the season for giving, but we've been giving you winners all season long. Warren has had a winning week in an unheard of 14 of 15 weeks this season. And since the beginning of November, his elevated plays are hitting at a crazy 75%. And his computer totals at 73%. For the entire season, a $100 better is up $8,700. Historically, Warren's recommendations become even more profitable in the postseason, and you can save $75 when purchasing that package now. Just use the code HOLIDAY when checking out, and you'll get $75 off plus the next 3 weeks of our regular season betting recommendations for free. So if you purchase our postseason all-access package, which includes not only NFL, but college bowls, the NFL playoffs, and you'll also get the rest of the regular season free. So sign up now and stuff your stockings with cash instead of coal. Go to sharpfootball.com right now. Or right after the pod. Well, now, and listen to the pod in the background. Also, if you could please subscribe and give thumbs up on our YouTube channel. If you are watching or if you listen to us via audio podcast, please like and review the podcast, as it really does help us personally and the company to continue to deliver such great product. Ryan, welcome back.
Yeah, excited to dive into this week and hopefully bounce back from last week where I just went 1-4 with my props. So we need to get back on a winning track this week.
I'm sure you will. You're still crushing it for the season.
Yeah, we're still having a good year. We're 44-34 on the year, so still turning a profit. But we'd like to close it out strong these last couple of weeks.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In DFS, I had my second decent week in the last 4 weeks. I'm hoping I'm getting hot down the stretch. I came in 28th in the min-max and 128th in the first down. My big strategy, Ryan, was to go 50% of my 200 teams with Case Keenum, who was $4,000. We didn't even know about Keenum when we did our show last Thursday, I don't believe. And he put up only 12 points. If he had gotten just one more touchdown, I had plenty of chances to really go a long way. But it is what it is, my friend.
Yeah, that's a tough break, certainly. But a good strategy to try to go for the lower end of the quarterback barrel. Obviously, it allowed you to still have a pretty decent week by stacking some other positions.
Yeah, the chalky guys were all about 6K, 63K. So, and even the Tommy DeVitos were 5K. So that extra $2,000 in salary, I put in a lot of rules into the optimizer to get those really good late games along with Keenum at quarterback. And if he had gotten 20 points, I would have taken down that min-max. Yep. So I enjoyed the strategy. It was fun building those teams. You don't get too many opportunities like that anymore. And, I just wanted to bring it up because when you see stuff like that, you know, we talked about how last week was a tough week to fit what we wanted. When you get those opportunities, make the most of them. All right, let's move on to your props for the week. And you've got Antonio Gibson receptions over. Can you tell me why? You know, I'm going to talk about Gibson a little bit in the DFS section. I'm a little torn on him, so I'm very interested to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I'm going to play this if it's at 4.5 receptions or lower. There's no line right now, I think probably because Brian Robinson is on the injury report, so probably waiting to see what his status is. But regardless, I think I like this. over because he's, you know, he's seen a really good usage rate lately. We got a good blend of strong recent track record and a favorable matchup here. He's hit 5 receptions in 4 of his last 6 games, so strong recent usage. He also gets a good matchup in the Jets defense. Obviously, the Jets have a strong defense, but they do, their scheme allows for more opportunities for running backs. In fact, the Jets defense sees the highest running back target share in the league. And like we've talked about throughout the season, one of the factors here is that they have a very low blitz rate. The Jets blitz on only at a 17% rate. That's the second lowest rate in the league. That typically means your running back isn't staying in to help out blocking as often. So he's out available as an option in the passing game more. And so that, you know, factors in here as well. So given the fact that they are trying to get Gibson involved and they will probably have a good opportunity to do so given the Jets scheme, I think this is a good opportunity to bet the over for him.
Yeah, good. That's good because he's not getting a lot of ownership in early DFS. And, you know, I think people are tired of Gibson. You know, he was a sleeper who became a post-hype sleeper, who became a post-post-hype sleeper, who now is just sound asleep. And, you know, unfortunately for my best ball teams, Brian Robinson looks to be out again. So I'm hoping that he plays and does well. Because I think I've got him on one or two of my open teams. Jahmyr Gibbs, we've done a lot with rushing and receiving overs this year. You're on the Gibbs over, and another guy that I will be talking about in DFS.
Yeah, Jahmyr Gibbs, longest rush over 13.5 yards. We talked about this last week, how this is probably becoming a matchup-proof prop for us that we were just going to ride out to the end of the year. And we're going to put that to the test this week because the Vikings are the number one defense at limiting big plays. Only 1.1% of running back carries against Minnesota go for 15 or more yards. That's the lowest rate in the league. But I think Gibbs just falls in this matchup-proof category. Nick Chubb was that guy for us last year. We played him almost all season on the over on his longest rush, regardless of what the matchup was, and it paid off, hitting an incredible percentage, something like 80-85% he hit last year. And Gibbs seems to be in that category now. He's ran for 20 or more yards for his longest rush in 8 of his last 10 games. And so if you're putting up those kinds of numbers week in and week out, there's really not, the line never goes above 20 yards. I believe there was only one week last year where Nick Chubb's number hit above 20 yards, despite the fact that he was also churning out 20-yard runs week after week. It just seems like the sportsbooks won't put the line higher than that. In this case with Gibbs, it's down at 13.5 still. There has been no adjustment to the rate at which he's breaking off these incredibly long runs, possibly because his usage isn't incredibly high, not as high as certainly a guy like Chubb last year. So that's got to factor into your thinking a little bit, but we've seen enough of a track record. Like I said, 8 of 10 games, his longest rush has hit 20 yards. So if he's doing that week after week, we have to keep betting it, even against a defense like the Vikings. We've got a little bit of evidence that he can do this even against a good defense too, because just a couple weeks ago against the Bears, they ranked 4th by that metric of limiting long runs. And sure enough, Gibbs hit the over. He broke off a 36-yard run in that game. So we even have seen him against a very good run defense, and he's broken through to hit this over. So at this point, we're going to ride this out through the rest of the season. Doesn't matter who they play. Doesn't really even matter to me what the line is. They could, you know, take it up to 17, 18 yards, and I'm still going to play the over based on how he's producing.
Yeah, I like it. I'm not the best at everything, right? And I think one of the keys to life is being humble enough to know that you make mistakes and being willing to adjust quickly when you do. I didn't draft a lot of Gibbs this year in best ball. I did when he would drop to the 4th round, but not in the 3rd. And early on, it looked like I was right. The reason why Montgomery was playing ahead of him, but when Montgomery got hurt, it gave the Lions a chance to see what Gibbs could do. And he did something that I didn't know he could do because he wasn't even asked to do it in college, which is to be a real contributor in the red zone. I am all about Gibbs the rest of the way and going forward, because he's shown not only the things that were obvious on tape of how special he was, but he also has proven he can do what we didn't think he can do. And the sky is the limit for him, I think, Ryan.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's running behind arguably the best run blocking offensive line in the league. So that's certainly a big factor in him doing what he can do, even in some short yardage situations when he gets those opportunities. We probably maybe undervalued that aspect and just what a change that was, because Alabama, despite their reputation the past couple of years, has had a very poor offensive line. And so that was probably a fact in hindsight, that was probably a factor in why he struggled so much in those situations in college. And now he goes to the NFL where he's running behind a fairly dominant offensive line. And that has certainly made a difference for him.
Yeah. And if you give that guy an inch, he can literally take a mile. Speaking of really impressive rookies, I had this guy as my third favorite rookie running back coming out. And I didn't think he'd be even as good as he turned out to be. You're on Devin Achane this week.
Yeah, I'll be on the over on his receiving yards at 24 and a half. It's a little bit higher than I was expecting. It took a nice jump from last week, but you know, that's a reaction to the fact that he's been used more in the passing game as of late. Over half of his receptions on the year have come in the last three games. So they're obviously making an adjustment here with the offense and using him a little bit differently and trying to get him more involved in the passing game, which I think absolutely makes sense. He's the type of running back that you want to use in the passing game. He's hit 24 more yards in three straight games. And I think this game against the Cowboys has some shootout potential. Obviously, the Cowboys have a very good defense, but this is the only game on the slate with a total over 50. Miami's favored by only 1 point right now. You know, that combination obviously screams shootout potential. And I think if this does end up being one of the more higher scoring games, if it, you know, if it reaches a point late in the game where it's back and forth a little bit, Achane's going to continue to stay involved throughout the contest. And with a running back like this and a number that's relatively low still at 24 and a half yards, he can do that in one play with his explosive ability. So this is the type of running back that I love betting the receiving yards over when it's, you know, in a relatively low spot like this, just because, you know, we've seen how explosive he could be. He can, even if he doesn't hit it with, even if he doesn't get, you know, a 25 yard reception, he could only end up with two receptions. But if, you know, if one of them is 18 yards, it becomes very easy for him to hit the over on this. So he's the type of running back that this is the perfect prop to play with.
Yeah. I think, you know, my question for you after I stumbled over my tongue is, would finding out that Tyreek Hill is active change your feeling on this prop?
No, I don't think so, because, you know, like I said, his usage goes back a couple weeks now, and Hill last week was the first week he missed, right? He got injured in the game before that.
Yes. Hill got hurt 2 weeks ago. Struggled to play that. He only played about half of that game, and then he missed last week.
Yeah, so we've seen his usage. They started using him more in the passing game even before that game without Hill. So I think this has been a conscious effort late in the season to get him more involved in the passing game. Obviously, if Hill's out, it probably increases the probability of him hitting this over, just because, you know, again, Achane is, you know, those plays where you might want to get Hill involved on some of the shorter underneath routes, Achane is a guy that you can use in the same way. But a lot of Hill's damage comes down the field, and you're not using Achane in that way either. So, you know, I don't think he's completely tied to it in a way that would make me swing one way or the other on this prop based on Hill's availability.
Awesome. I just wanted to check for the discerning public. The last prop is an under. You have James Conner rushing yards under.
Yeah, the rushing yards under 51 and a half yards against the Bears. This number came in a little bit lower than I was expecting. I'd hoped it would be a little bit higher, but it seems like the Bears are getting some respect for their run defense, which they should, and that's the reason why I'm on the under here. Just going to run through a few numbers just to highlight how good the Bears' run defense has been, because I don't think they've really gotten a ton of public attention throughout the season. They're giving up 3.6 yards per attempt to running backs. That ranks fourth in the league. 0.98 yards before contact per attempt allowed. That ranks fifth. And a 49% contact rate at or behind the line of scrimmage. That ranks fifth. So this has really been a top five, by almost any metric you look at, a top five run defense from the Bears. And in this particular matchup with the Bears favored by 4.5, I really like the Bears in this matchup. I think they control the game. And so that factors into my thinking here. Not only is it a great run defense, but if they're controlling this game from start to finish, like they should, it's going to limit Connor's usage as well. And so if, you know, if the Cardinals are playing from behind, you're not going to want to give Connor a ton of touches in the run game where he's likely, you know, running into a brick wall of the Bears defense here. So I'm going to, even though the line is lower than I was hoping, I'm still going to be on the under for Connor's rushing yards at 51.5.
Yeah, I want to pick your brain a little bit, and we'll get to that in a second. But before we do, I want to remind you that it is the season for giving, but we've been giving you winners all season long. Warren has had a winning week in an unheard of 14 of 15 weeks this season. And since the beginning of November, his elevated plays are hitting at 75% and his computer totals at 73%. For the entire season, a $100 better is up $8,700. Historically, Warren's recommendations become even more profitable in the postseason, and you can save $75 when purchasing that package now. Just use the code HOLIDAY. That code is HOLIDAY when checking out, and you'll get $75 off plus the next 3 weeks of our regular season betting recommendations for free. So if you purchase our postseason all-access package, which includes college bowls and the NFL playoffs, you'll also get the regular rest of the regular season free. So sign up now and stuff your stockings with cash and not coal.
All right, Todd, so that wraps up the props segments. Let's jump over to your DFS stuff. And as always, we'll start with quarterbacks. How are you approaching the quarterback decisions based on the early intel?
Yep. It's another tough week. It's a 9-game slate. And as you mentioned, there's not a lot of high game totals. At quarterback, ownership has fallen early on a couple guys that, you know, are a little tough to stomach, especially Nick Mullins. Now, Mullins has strong weapons against the Lions team that has regressed recently versus the pass, but he's $5,300. And, you know, I don't know, man. Right now it's showing 20%. I find it hard to believe it'll stay that high, his ownership. If it does, I will be under. Justin Fields has a great matchup versus Arizona, is at 15% at 7,100. I think this number rises because Arizona has just been a team we've been attacking all year. But my concern is we just haven't seen the 100-yard rushing days this year. And, you know, the bring back in that game is easy. It's McBride. So, you know, DJ Moore, McBride are probably going to be pretty chalky as well. You know, one way around that might be to play McBride and Kmet together, put one of them in the flex, as people tend not to do that much. Joe Flacco is a good value at 5,300 and 7% ownership. But if I had said that to you a few weeks before, before he signed, everyone would have laughed. But he could get steamed up too. There's two lower price guys who I'm going to keep an eye on the ownership. One is Taylor Heineke at 4,800 and Trevor Siemian at 4,700. Siemian's showing no ownership and Garrett Wilson is showing ownership. Putting them together, therefore, is pretty intriguing. And I've always liked Siemian a little bit more than the average backup quarterback. But, you know, he's not at 4,000 like my guy Case Keenum last week. On the high end, Dak isn't much of a value. All the pricing in that game is tough, but I'm going to do my best to play a lot of Dak this week. I agree with what Ryan said earlier. I think it's a bounce back week. Also, Tua has microscopic ownership and is a terrible value against the strong Cowboys pass rush. But again, as I've mentioned all season long, give me talent. You know, at times talent will overcome it. And if I know that Tyreek is out, I'll be even more interested because then it's just Tua, Waddle. Neither one's going to have a lot of ownership. And we just saw Waddle just get peppered last week and get a lot of the Tyreek opportunities. Ryan, your thoughts on those guys?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you on Tua, that there's definitely two sides to the coin here. On one hand, you know, like I said before, they're favored by 1 point in the game, and it's the highest total on the slate. So that screams the most obvious shootout potential on the slate. So having some exposure to Tua certainly makes sense. On the other side, though, you mentioned Cowboys' great pass rush. And I went back and looked into some numbers on how that has affected Tua this season. And it's kind of startling, and it kind of makes you want to stay away from Tua in this matchup. There have been four games this year when he's been pressured 30% of the time or more. The Dolphins are 1-3 in those games, and Tua's fantasy outputs in those games. He put up 27 points against the Chargers. That was their one win in the mix. So he is capable of still producing in this scenario. But then he put up 14 points against the Bills, 10 against the Eagles, 9 against the Titans. So his worst matchups of the year have been in these games where he's been pressured a lot, and he goes up against probably the best pass rush in the league, the Cowboys, where they've pressured quarterbacks higher than 30% of the time in every single game this season. So a very high probability that he faces a high pressure rate, which he has not done well with this season. So it, you know, you can certainly, even though this game has shootout potential, he could certainly overcome it. It does make you think that this is a pretty bad matchup for him, and that, you know, the potential certainly exists for the Cowboys to cruise to a very easy win behind a dominant defensive performance.
Yeah, I mean, I'll get to my favorite way to play the Dolphins. My only point is, if Tua is going to have less than 1% ownership, you have to be over, right? The chance that I agree with everything you said. And I mean, it's obvious if you watch the games. And I just feel like, though, he has a better than 1% chance of having the top quarterback score of the week.
Completely with you. With that kind of low roster share, you don't actually need a ton of exposure to him to benefit.
I do 200 lineups, so 5% is 10 teams. Yeah. That's what I mean by over. If he gets up to 3-4%, I would rather go a different way with this game.
Yeah.
Any of the other quarterbacks? Oh, what's your thoughts on Fields this week? I wanted to get your thoughts on Fields.
You know, I sort of have the same thought on Fields every week. It sort of depends a little bit on what his roster share is going to be. But even though we haven't seen the huge rushing performance breakout, it's there. The potential exists in every game. And, you know, obviously the Cardinals are the type of defense that could allow it and could also allow for a great passing performance from him too. So yeah. I think it would, unless his roster share just gets up to a crazy high number this week, I think it would be foolish to dismiss him.
Yep, I agree.
All right, so let's jump over to the running backs. You know, a little bit, probably some tougher decisions in the running back position this week. What are you thinking early on?
Well, I mean, there's nobody that jumps out. Well, there is a couple people that I'll save them for the end. Let's go over the most owned guys. Ty Chandler, I got three of my best ball DK teams. I went through a short window, Ryan, where I was on Ty Chandler late. It finally paid off. I got three out of my five DK teams have him. So I'm hoping he has a big week. But right now his ownership is looking at 25%. And the salary at $5,300 is not great. You also have to consider that there was no Madison last week. And I think that even if Madison is back, Chandler will be the lead back. But I think they rest Chandler more if Madison is there. It just makes me a little, you know, less. So I don't know what I'm going to do with him at this point. But, those are the factors you have to make a decision on. Right now I'm showing Jonathan Taylor returning. We saw them ease him back the last game, and it was kind of 50-50, and then they ramped him up from there. But it looks like Moss might miss. If Moss misses, I'll have more interest, but 7,200 and 17% is tough. The next group, Rashad White, Chuba Hubbard, Devin Singletary, Bijan, Travis Etienne, and Breece Hall, are all showing right around 20% ownership. I haven't played Brees and it hasn't hurt me, but it is a very good matchup. So to the guys that I'm really interested in playing right now, because both of them are 73 and 7,100, I think, the Miami running backs are not showing a lot of ownership because it's hard to pick which one. If the ownership on both of them stays low, I will be way, you know, last week I had 20% Mostert, and it was why I had such a good week. One of the main reasons why I had such a good week. He was only owned about 3%. And Mike McDaniels is one of the guys that we can get rational coaching from. And you saw what the Bills, James Cook did to the Cowboys last week. You talk about that pass rush. The way to slow down that pass rush is by a good running game. No one has a better running game than the Dolphins. I'm on both of the Dolphins running backs this week, if they're healthy enough to get on the field.
Yeah, a couple thoughts on some guys you mentioned. I'll start with Ty Chandler. This one makes me nervous this week because, especially given the high roster share, like you mentioned, and then the factor here is that they're playing a much better team this week in the Lions. And with Nick Mullins at quarterback, this game might just not be close. So Ty Chandler might not have a ton of opportunities. Remember that game last week, the Vikings led almost throughout that entire game against the Bengals until overtime. They took the lead late in the first quarter and you were either leading or tied throughout the rest of regulation. That had a huge impact on Chandler's usage. That's very unlikely to be the case against the Lions. Maybe they can keep it close, but they're probably not leading throughout the majority of the game. And so that's going to affect his usage. And especially, like you said, with Madison back in the fold as well, if that's the case, that's going to, even if Chandler is carrying the majority of the workload, that's going to factor in having a reliable guy behind him who's seen a lot of action throughout this year. So I really have no interest in Chandler given the amount of lineups that he's going to be rostered in, at least the way it looks early on. The other one, Mostert and Achane, like you mentioned, I'm with you. I'm on both of those guys this week based on the fact that it has the potential to be a high scoring game. And I think one of the ways that you could do it in some of your lineups is to play both of them, because against this Cowboys defense, I think it makes a lot more sense to use Mostert more often in the running game. He's clearly the more physical runner and is probably going to fare better against the Cowboys run defense. But we've seen the Cowboys show some vulnerability at times, including last week to running backs in the passing game. We already talked about how I like the over on Achane's rushing or receiving yards. Sorry. So the potential for Mostert to have a great game on the ground, maybe get a couple touchdowns on the ground, and Achane to be heavily involved in the passing game, you know, even if he doesn't reach the end zone in this game, if he's involved enough in the passing game, if it's a high scoring game, he's seeing, he gets five or six receptions and, you know, has a little bit of usage on the ground as well, he could also put up a valuable game. So I think you could create some unique lineups by playing both of them and hoping that it's a high scoring game where the running backs are the guys who are reaching the end zone.
Yeah. In my main event team that has a shot at the, we're in 36th place, me and my partner, Biplop Mandel, we have both, and I'm leaning towards playing both ahead of Swift, although it's a really good matchup for Swift against the Giants. But in DFS, with both at 7,000 and low roster share, I think I keep them separate, but I love the thought. You know, I love
Yeah, it's not something you would want to do in a ton of lineups, but it's going to be because of the fact that you don't play two running backs very often and where their salary is at, it's going to be a very unique lineup.
Oh, it might be like, you know, out of 100,000 lineups, there might be like eight. If they do both go nuclear and the rest of your team is different, you could take down a GPP. If you can find value on a week where I'm not finding a ton of it, but you know, this is the silly part of the season where we, a lot of times we get some good values opening up later in the week.
Yep. Yeah. Just like last week with Keenum that you took advantage of.
Right.
All right, let's jump over to wide receivers. We definitely have some higher salaried guys emerging here as strong options this week. So what are some of your early thoughts at the wide receiver position?
Yep. Right now we're seeing Justin Jefferson and CeeDee Lamb as the two best values. There's no wide receiver with over 25% ownership. I have a hard time with JJ at that ownership with Nick Mullins. I know Detroit has been easier to pass on lately, but I probably would be under on JJ, probably try and be over on Lamb. I wanted to last week. It just didn't work out. Mid-teens ownership, mid-teens to 20% ownership. DJ Moore, DeAndre Hopkins, Garrett Wilson, Jared Reed, and Jonathan Mingo as the low price guy. None of them stand out as bad plays to me other than Mingo. I feel, Ryan, like every week we do this, I say the same thing. I'm just not going to play a 25% owned 3,600 guy unless that guy has gotten more opportunity than normal, right? Last week, who was the low owned guy that I had? But either way, I was way under on Wandell, on a few of the other guys who were projected to have high ownership. I think Mingo is, 3,600 for a reason, and playing him into ownership is not something that I'm likely to do. A couple guys that I kind of like. I like Noah Brown, whether or not Nico comes back at 5,400 and almost no ownership. I know Keenum didn't look that great, but the one guy he was throwing to a lot was Noah Brown. He's explosive. He's a guy I'm going to keep an eye on. And if I have to take someone under 4K, it's going to be Jameson Williams at 1% ownership. The dude's too talented. The breakout is going to happen. It's just a matter of when. I don't know that this week is all that likely on the road, but it is inside. So I'll throw him out. The one guy that I think right now, I played a good bit last week, but not as much because we didn't find out till really late that he was active. But Dontavian Wicks is a guy I am extremely interested in this week. Reed is, looking like the 1A, but I like Wicks. I think he is a real up and coming player. At $4,300, I will be over the field at his current ownership, Ryan.
Yeah, I'm with you on most of these guys. Staying away from Mingo makes a ton of sense to me. The total on that game is only 37.5. And so he hasn't seen the huge usage at any point this season to think that he's going to give you a great number unless he's scoring. And who knows how much scoring the Panthers are actually going to do in that game. With you on Jameson Williams as well, the breakout's going to come at some point. I didn't look up the numbers prior to this week, but I do remember back on Thanksgiving, we played the over on his longest reception in that game, and we won because he was seeing really strong usage down the field. And so any receiver that's that explosive, that's seeing a decent amount of downfield targets, the potential is there for him to put up a strong number even without a ton of usage, because he catches
had seven one. Targets last week. I didn't realize. I just looked it up. Seven targets.
A guy like that who sees downfield targets, he catches one 40-yard touchdown, and given the low salary, you're doing pretty well right off that one play.
Yeah, especially considering that there isn't a lot of value this week. Getting someone that has the talent. Again, one of the things that I will mention, whether it's best ball, season long, I want to bet on talented guys, right? If there's a reason why they're not getting opportunity, there's something in their way. I always want a guy who, if that thing is removed, can get me the type of performance that I really want. And I don't see Mingo as that kind of guy.
Yeah. Another guy you mentioned, Dontavian Wicks, I think he definitely has big upside, especially if Christian Watson is out. He was used as a deep threat a lot in college, especially a couple of years ago on that two or three years ago, Virginia had a really explosive offense where their quarterback, Brennan Armstrong, was throwing downfield a ton. And Wicks really excelled in that role. And he hasn't been used downfield a lot, mostly because there have been guys ahead of him. He only has five targets at 20 or more yards downfield. But Christian Watson is second on the team with 14 deep ball targets. So if he's removed, Wicks is a natural guy to step into the role that role and see some of those targets, like we talked about with these lower guys on lower salaries. One big play that goes for a touchdown, and you're already in good shape right there. So Wicks absolutely makes sense, especially in a relatively favorable matchup against the Panthers defense. The other one where I'll sort of go the opposite direction of you on is I'm going to say to stay away from the Houston receivers. I don't believe Stroud has officially been ruled out, but assuming he is, I would stay away from the Texans receivers against the Browns. There have only been four games this year where a receiver has put up 15 or more fantasy points against Fair Cleveland. And is Case Keenum going to be the guy that helps lead one of the Houston receivers?
He certainly didn't look like it last week.
Yeah, probably not. So I would stay away. Now, if Stroud is surprisingly, he bounces back and he's healthy for that game, that changes the equation completely. And in that case, I would definitely be on Brown, given the rate that Stroud was targeting him down the field. Totally different scenario there. I would certainly take him. But if Keenum is there, I think the Browns defense is just too good. I wouldn't bet on an outlier performance in that scenario.
Yeah, I think that is a fair point. For some reason, I do this Thursday morning, and I've got like an hour window to get the sheet done and to get some plays together. And I'm going to be honest, I missed that they were playing Cleveland, and that's my bad. So
to talk it through.
Yep. Good catch by Ryan.
Absolutely. All right, let's move over to the tight ends. Always a tough position for us. What do you got for us?
Well, Trey McBride's up to 5,700. Njoku's up to 5,300. Both are showing serious ownership. McBride 25%, Njoku 13%. I mean, as much as I love McBride, that's getting tough, right? Especially in a week where there's not a lot of value. Now you're up around the price of Laporta. You're up around the price of Hockenson. I'm not saying I won't play him. I certainly will. But especially if I'm playing field stacks, I'm going to look to not just have McBride without something else that is differentiating. Three guys in the next. I do like Njoku with 13%. He is just getting tremendous usage. The guy was always a freak athlete, and Joe Flacco just don't care. Joe Flacco is going to fling him the ball. I kick myself because I had 25% and then I read something and I knocked Njoku down to 13%. I would have had a really good week if I had kept Njoku up where I originally had him. The next tier, Chig, Okonkwa, Kmet, and Engram are all getting ownership in the teens. I like Engram, but with the backup quarterback, I don't know that I'm going to play him into ownership. Kmet, to me, is a guy that with ownership, I'm probably going to only play with Fields. And Chig, I would just rather find someone else. I mean, I know the guy's talented. I know Tannehill's coming back. But that offense, they might just be giving up at this point. I mentioned Kyle Pitts last week, and then as the week went on, I didn't play him. There's not a lot of guys I like lower, so I'm going to mention him again. With Taylor Heinicke coming back and Arthur Smith finally starting to feel some heat, at 4K of Kyle Pitts' low ownership, and they're going to throw a little more. I know it's a more of a running matchup. The next guy I'm going to throw out is my boy Jake Ferguson at 4,900, 7% ownership. I like that. And I know even with knowing Cleveland, I think Dalton Schultz right now, because of Cleveland, has 1% ownership at 4,600. I saw Keenum. Again, I watched almost that whole game because I was I had 50% Keenum. And as the game wore on, you started seeing more and more Dalton Schultz. So again, is it a great play? No. I'm hoping to find a lower price guy I like this week. But right now, tight end is kind of tough, Ryan.
Yeah, like every week, pretty much. I'm with you on a lot of the logic there. You know, I know I just talked about avoiding the Texans receivers, but I think given the low roster share for Schultz, if it's right around 1%, and the fact that he was seeing some decent usage last week, I wouldn't stay away from that. I think that's certainly reasonable for you to want to target that.
Tucker Kraft at 3,700. Kate Otten, I forgot to mention, at 3,300. I mean, those are the guys, if you're going down, that, you know, don't have ownership and appeal to me a little bit.
Yeah, I like Kraft as well. I liked him coming out of college. I think he's actually probably a better athlete than Luke Musgrave, the tight end who was playing over him earlier in the year. So from a fantasy perspective, you know, he could certainly have a breakout game now that he's seeing more opportunities. I've been kind of betting on that the past couple of weeks. The one tight end that I wanted to dive into a little bit more is Trey McBride, because I know you mentioned that you're kind of shying away from him given the fact that his salary keeps rising. I actually think he's
still, his ownership is still high.
Yeah, and it's still high. I think he's still a good value. The fact that the ownership is still high is not ideal, but looking at where his production has been, where his salary is, he's still a steal at that point. Since week 8, when Zach Ertz went down, if you combined wide receivers and tight ends, McBride's putting up the 10th most points per game. The most among tight ends, but 10th most among even the wide receivers too. And if you remove the players who aren't on this slate, because obviously we have some games on Monday and Saturday as well, he's averaging the 6th most points per game in that span. And then if you compare him to the wide receivers who are in that spot, he's actually just averaging slightly more points per game in that span than Jalen Waddle, who's $2,100 higher. So you're getting Jalen Waddle production at a really discounted price. I know it looks like a tough sell because he's starting to get up there with the tight ends who have bigger names and more of an established track record. But at this point, I think we need to buy in and believe in Trey McBride. And again, in this game, they're going to be underdogs. It's a good Bears defense, but it's a better run defense than pass defense. So I think that he's still a steal this week.
Yeah, as I mentioned, I was torn. And as you were talking, the thought came to me, you know, well, there's two issues with playing a lot of him. There's not a lot of value everywhere else. And tight end tends to be the one position where we can get value. And then you mentioned that he's outplaying a lot of wide receivers. He might be the best flex play of the week in that case, where you take a lower price tight end and you put McBride in the flex. That would give you the differentiation. I typically don't play a lot of two tight end, but you could make a rule, in your optimizer what I typically do is I allow the tight end position to have a certain amount percentage of my lineups with two tight ends, but then I'll make a rule, max one of everyone that I don't want to be together. So basically all your normal low price guys can't be in the same lineup together, but they could be in a lineup with Trey McBride. So
treat him like a wide receiver essentially and pair him with Tucker Kraft or someone.
I think Kraft had a lot of ownership last week, played pretty good. I think he got dinged up. But he could be in for, how's his matchup versus tight end this week, Kraft?
Going up against the Panthers.
Yeah. Are the Panthers good against the tight end?
They're not the ideal tight end defense because they play a fair amount of single high coverage, which obviously clogs the middle of the field a little bit more, but you know, it's a low salary and it's a really athletic tight end who I think has the potential for a breakout game. I think he was one of the better pass catching tight ends in this draft class. So I still think the breakout game is out there for him. So I'm still interested in him this week.
Awesome. All right. That's going to do it for Ryan and I for this week. I hope you guys have a Merry Christmas. We'll be back next week for our New Year's special week 17, where all the money is, given out in fantasy, but there's also DFS and Ryan's props. Don't forget the $75 off the Warren Sharp packages at sharpfootball.com. And we will see you next week.